Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Roy Morris. May it please the court. I'm here to talk to you about a case that involves a child who's walking around and literally could die within several hours. Her condition is called severe chronic neutropenia, and it's very much like HIV/AIDS. It's not contagious, though. That's the difference. And in this particular case, you can walk around and be asymptomatic and appear completely normal.
Was all that told to the other courts that have had this controversy?
I'm sorry?
Was all that told to the other courts that have had this controversy?
The only court where this information was presented in the way I just told it to you was to the trial court below, and it was documented by letters from experts of severe
crime. Hasn't the whole custody and responsibility question been before the Virginia courts?
All right. This is not a custody case. All right.
I have a hard time saying why it's not.
Well, a custody case is involving who decides who has legal and physical custody of the child. Mm-hmm. We're asking here that the District of Columbia fulfill its responsibility and not interfere with the rights of the child and the rights of the mother.
Well, let's just focusing on the rights of the child. That sounds, it may not be technically a custody issue, mm-hmm. but it sounds like an issue of who is entitled to speak for the child's interests.
Well,
which
certainly
sounds like very central to Elk Grove.
Well, that's a good, it's an excellent question, because who's to speak for the child's interests when the facts support or certainly strongly suggest that the person that the District of Columbia believes should be speaking for the child's interests is implicated as possibly causing the illness?
And doesn't the record reflect that he's had her treated by specialists of the relevant sorts?
No, actually not.
What about the pediatric oncologist?
A generic pediatric oncologist who basically treats cancer patients in the Lombardi Center of Georgetown University Hospital, who's only...
He had at least three different doctors under whose regular treatment she's been, right?
No, she's
doesn't
only...
the record
really,
say that?
She's had only really one doctor. The others are simply supervising physicians. This is a rare disease, only 800 people in the world.
Back to this not being a custody case, isn't it an attribute of custody to make this sort of decision?
To the contrary.
I thought it was when I was state judge for 3 years.
Well, it depends on the state, actually. Custody.
Isn't it an inherent attribute of custody that the person primarily making the parental decision is the custodial parent, whatever state you're in?
The day-to-day responsibilities, yes, lie with the legal custodian. Mm-hmm. However, in the District of Columbia as well as in Virginia, they bifurcate it with guardianship versus legal custody. Guardianship deals with the more significant decision-making and has to do with the rights of the guardians versus each other. In INRI GK, the D.C. Court of Appeals specifically pointed out that even though in a case where the District of Columbia actually got legal custody of a child, the parents still had guardianship rights and still had veto power over whether or not the child could, in that particular case, be administered psychotropic drugs. It's bifurcated, and it's unfortunately because of abbreviated quotations of the statute, for example, 914, even there in the District of Columbia, which doesn't apply here, but the District of Columbia claims that it does, it specifically says the first sentence is responsibility as opposed to rights. Rights are different than responsibilities, and that is clearly laid out in INRI GK. The problem here is that We're not asking for the issuance of a custody decree. We're not asking for anything like that. We're asking that the district, as I say, District Columbia, not only fulfill its responsibility, but stop obstructing. It's obstructed with the German government, which is not, of course, Dr. King. The German government asked that this child get an independent medical evaluation. It directed that request to the U.S. State Department.
What's the significance of that in a court of law?
Well,
why should we even know that?
Well, because it's the District of Columbia's responsibility, actually, to field those requests and deal with them. They failed to do so.
Why should the court have any regard for what the Republic of Germany wants? Why does that have anything to do with this case?
Well, under the VCCR, which is the Vienna Convention on the Consular Relations, the competent authority in this particular case, the District of Columbia, has obligations to foreign entities, when especially in the situation where there's a guardian, a minor in need of help. And this is a case where it is now well documented, based on current medical information. We are working off of up-to-date medical information, not a 2009 decision, which is what the District of Columbia does. We are working off the current medical information using experts who are specialists in this area, who look at this thing. But the father is all we're asking for. All the German embassy was asking for.
Is the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child self-executing?
No, this is the U.S. UN. The issue here is it's the UN Convention.
I'm sorry, Vienna. Okay, is that self-executing?
No, that's self-executing. And in fact, courts who have ruled on involving Article 36 have actually said that equitable, basically filing a complaint to enforce it, is fair game. This circuit has already ruled in Earl v. District of Columbia that it doesn't take a position because it realizes there's a split among the circuits on whether or not the VCCR it gives a private rights to private individuals. However, the Congressional Reporting Service 2004 report specifically pointed out that the federal courts are getting it wrong on that, because the International Court of Justice has specifically ruled in several cases that it does endow individuals with rights. I see my time is up. Are there any more questions before I?
Thank you, Ms. Morris.
All right, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Stacey Anderson on behalf of the District of Columbia. Dismissal of appellant's claims in this case is appropriate because Alma's mother lacks standing to bring suit on her behalf by virtue of the Virginia custody order granting Alma's father sole legal custody over Alma. He is the person who is in the position to make decisions regarding suits to be brought on her behalf as well as her medical care.
Even if she lacks standing as next friend, I understood what Mr. Morris was arguing is that she makes some claims on her own behalf.
She does, Your Honor. And with respect to those claims, it's the district's position that dismissal is appropriate because they failed to state a claim for relief. There are a handful of claims brought on her own behalf. For example, she alleges that her substantive and procedural due process rights were violated. She fails, however, to plead any facts that would substantiate such a claim. There's no allegation of outrageous government behavior on the district's part that would support a substantive due process violation. And with respect to her procedural due process claims involving access to medical records and school information, she simply fails to plead facts that she was denied due process. She doesn't allege what process was due. The complaint.
Slow down just a little.
Yeah.
Sorry, Your Honor.
You hear how slow I talk? I listen.
Yes, sir. I apologize. That is a problem I have, and I will try to slow down. The complaint with respect to the due process claims fails to allege any effort to obtain the information, the circumstances surrounding the denial of that information, or plead any facts that would indicate that certain processes were due. She also alleges a claim of discrimination based on her race, again, failing to support those allegations with any facts in the record that would suggest a plausible basis to conclude that the district denied her access to information or records because of her race.
So you don't take issue with Mr. Morris's position that this VCCR is self-executing and provides a private right of action, or is your position we don't have to get that far?
I think you don't have to get that far, Your Honor, because, again, I think by failing to identify which specific provisions of the Vienna Convention that were violated, she's failed to state a claim for relief. But it is not the district's position that it's self-executing. We have taken the position that it does not provide a private right of action. As the court recently noted in Earl, there is a split in the circuits on that. We maintain that the courts that have decided there's no private right of action are the correct decisions. If there are no further questions, Your Honor, we'd rest on our briefs.
I just want to get clarification on your position on Rooker-Feldman.
Yes, sir.
You don't seem to raise that, at least if I understand your brief correctly, you don't raise it as a defense to the claims, perhaps not a jurisdictional bar, to the claims raised by Mrs. King herself on her own behalf.
That's correct, Your Honor.
I guess it's not clear to me that those claims aren't, to use the magic phrase, inextricably intertwined with the whole state law custody issues.
Sure, Your Honor. And we didn't explicitly argue it in that manner, but I do see Your Honor's point in the sense that whether she succeeds or fails in her claims does turn on the rights that she has with respect to that Virginia custody order. We would argue that the court must give that custody order full faith and credit, and given the fact that she does not have the right to make those decisions on the child's behalf, her rights have not been violated in the sense that the district's rationale for denying her access, for example, to the school records would be premised on the custody order rather than any type of animus towards her directly.
Well, I guess at least in Elk Grove, the plaintiff is acting, as it were, against the custody order or seeking rights that the custody order seemed to exclude him from. To some extent, she's invoking rights that the custody order gives her. So I just, where do those stand, both for Elk Grove and for Rooker-Feldman?
Well, certainly to the extent that she challenges the Virginia custody order in any respect,
yes,
Rooker-Feldman would preclude those challenges.
Sure.
I don't see that she really has rights under the custody agreement to the...
Doesn't she have a right to medical records?
She has a limited right to medical records, correct. But again, I think she's failed to plead facts that would support an improper denial of access to those records. She again alleges a due process violation with respect to that, but pleads no facts regarding the process she received or the process she believes she should have received but was denied. So I think her claim would certainly fail on that basis at the pleading stage.
Yeah. Has Rooker-Feldman ever been applied to someone seeking federal enforcement of rights provided by a state law judgment?
I'm not aware of it, Your Honor.
No.
I don't believe so.
No.
I think the underlying concern with the Rooker-Feldman doctrine is to the extent it seeks to challenge or alter that state court judgment, federal court review would be precluded.
Yeah.
If there are no further questions, we'd ask that the court affirm. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time did Mr. Morris have?
Mr. Morris had 1 minute.
All right.
Reserve three, but I guess I could. Okay.
We'll give you 2 minutes.
All right, thank you. I'd like to talk about Elk Grove for just a second. This is important. There's a lot of differences between this case and Elk Grove, and it's completely off base to suggest that this case is anything like Elk Grove. First off, Elk Grove involved a California custody order that specifically laid out how decisions are to be made. It did not simply use the word sole custody. The second thing is that we're not asking for you to overturn or reverse or not even, you can accept as given the Virginia custody order, and Dr. King still has rights to bring it. Why? Because you have to go to the laws of Virginia to figure out what that judge meant by sole custody.
The proper place to have done that been by reopening or by motion in the cause in the Virginia custody case.
Virginia has no jurisdiction. They lost jurisdiction 21 days after entry of their final order, and everybody had already moved out of the state. That's the law. So, in fact, it's the District of Columbia that has jurisdiction. Now, so the District of Columbia is going to have to
Virginia
deal.
Virginia retains jurisdiction to administer the judgment that it has entered. It didn't lose jurisdiction, a custody case, and I think this is pretty well universal. The court retains jurisdiction until the child turns 18. Now, you have moved the child out of the state. It may not be able to effectuate the order. It may then find that it has lost or will elect not to exercise the jurisdiction. But you didn't go there and have them do that.
Actually, incorrect.
If you have rights under the Virginia order, you could have registered in D.C.
The Virginia
You show up in federal court with a domestic.
The UCCJEA of Virginia is different than that of most states. It actually is self-executing. When everybody moves out of the state, jurisdiction is lost.
Okay.
And all the other states require going back to the original state and asking, is it okay? Do you still have jurisdiction? That's not true in Virginia.
Well, so this would illustrate the kind of domestic question that's better handled in state courts than federal court, because I didn't know that.
But you don't even have to go there. Here's what's important is you don't even have to go there. And the reason you don't have to go there is you can take the Virginia law as it is. You can take sole custody from Virginia, use their definition of sole custody. You get primary responsibility is with the father. That's what sole custody means in Virginia. And it does, and who can sue on behalf of the child? Either parent can sue on behalf of the child. That's the law in Virginia. All right? And all of this stuff that the district court, D.C. keeps repeating about us not supporting with facts, there are 40-some-odd pages
What's
of facts.
What's the due process she should have had with respect to the medical records that she didn't get? Counsel for D.C. tells us that you have not pled in your due process claim with respect to the medical records, what the due process was that she didn't get.
The due process with regard to the request for medical records was that she's entitled to, A, get all the medical records that the District of Columbia has, which they do because they have the CNMC folks there, and they've also refused to give us the information about results of investigations that they supposedly did.
That's not the medical records investigation.
Yeah, no, for medical. They're medical. All right. And the second thing is that she has a right to correct those, and she's given them that information, provided them information on the severe chronic neutropenia. If I may characterize it, the District of Columbia's attitude toward this case, it's like the Sergeant Schultz in Stalag 13. It's I see nothing, I hear nothing, I don't know anything. All right. And that's exactly how the District of Columbia looks at this. And that kind of an attitude is egregious, especially when you have experts, unpaid experts, who take their time and put their reputation on the line to write letters of opinion that say basically this child could die. Now, you can't expect the father, and you cannot give him the idea that the father is the sole person who could bring a lawsuit to protect the child when the father is implicated as a possible cause.
Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you.